unseen wealth destroyer. The fact that people don't look at, if I pay cash for something, what is going to be different? What can I not do if I give away my cash for that car? You got to think about that stuff if you want to be wealthy. There's no escaping it.
The average person, though, is going to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars throughout their lifetime that otherwise could have been captured in this ecosystem or system designed for the infinite banking concept.
Do you still have concerns about, well, you're spending too much money, you have debt, your wealth is not compounding, you still don't have access to capital that you could be using for opportunities? So maybe you had a banner year, you cleared more than you've ever made, but it still feels like you're starting back at zero every January. Stop hitting the reset button on your millions. Put it somewhere where it's going to compound uninterrupted for you for the rest of your life.
And here's a hint. Doing what everyone else is doing and expecting a different result? Let's do something different.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right. Well, hey, good to see you, buddy. It's been a few days. We just got back from our trip to Birmingham, Alabama, for the annual Infinite Banking Concepts Think Tank. So we had a great time. And I think, I don't know, what'd you take away from that? I mean, I took some notes and I always have highlights from that trip, but you know, what were your takeaways from last week?
You know, there was a lot of frankness, I thought, in the presentation. I think a lot of things that were said kind of needed to be said, but it was in a good way. but I always say this, Dave, is I like going there because it I always learn something. There's always somebody that has a really good approach, but I always kind of get recentered and recaged and re-motivated to go out there and spread Nelson Nash's message. So that's the biggest thing that I always take away from the think tank. And the other thing is, it's always great to just see my pals that, you know, I see them generally once a year. Yeah, we talk on the phone once a month, but it's nice to see people in person that you only really see at these things once per year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like what you said about kind of it's a time to regroup, because we go every year. It's like in February every year, and you get some really good ideas from other practitioners on how to get the word out, how to bring this message to more people and bring it more clearly and spread the word. And then you go throughout the year and you start off and you make a few changes and you go throughout the year and then just life takes over. Right? You're just busy building the business, busy talking to people, doing this podcast. And so it's kind of nice to take that break once a year at the beginning of the year to refocus, to come back and say, okay, let's hone in on some things we can do better. So that's what I take away. And it actually kind of leads us into what we want to talk about, but go ahead and finish your thought there.
It kind of gives us a chance to work on the business, not just what we do most of the years. We're working in the business, right? Managing it, growing it. But it gives us a chance to just kind of think about how can I spread this message better? Or maybe there's a group of untapped people that need to hear this message that I haven't thought about yet. So that's nice.
Yeah. You know, and it's something everybody should be doing in their life. If you're a business owner, you should be taking that time at some point, maybe early in the year, to step out, zoom out, be around other business owners, taking a look at what you're doing in your business, what you could do better, what you could do differently. If you're a W-2 earner, maybe it's the same thing. Hey, what's my strategy this year with my career? Because most people, I think, really just go through their careers without a real strategy, without taking time to think, what's the next step? And I want to get from here to there. What do I need to do in between? So thinking about that is good. And we want to do that with our finances. This is a great time of year. You know, trying to do everything in December, it's impossible. Hey, do all your goal planning, do all your financial planning in December so you start January 1st running hard. Nobody does it because December, everybody knows, that's like the busiest month of the year. You don't have any bandwidth for anything. And then January is usually a good time, a couple weeks in, to kind of regroup and take a look at that. Well, here we are in February, a great time to do it if you haven't done it yet. Let's take a look at, what are you going to do differently this year? than you did last year, so you can be in a different position a year from now. What are you going to do differently this year than you did last year, so you can be in a different position a year from now?
Speaking of business owners, though, Dave, real quick, one of our clients who's a business owner out in, oh, if I mess this up, he'll be mad, Missouri, I think, is going to convert some of his term, two more policies, adding to his already kind of growing system of, gosh, how many does he have now? Four, maybe six. This would be seven and eight, maybe, I think.
Great. Great.
Yep.
Great time to do it. I think I did the exact same thing last year in January. I started a new policy, and I'm trying to figure out when the best time this year to start a new one will be. So that's always the next thing on the horizon is, okay, when am I ready to start the next one? I got term. I need to convert it. Yeah, that's a
right. So. And he's very strategic in that he wants to spread out the premiums throughout the year. So it's not seven or eight annual premiums that hit all in January or February. He's just he spaces them out a little bit, which I think is great.
Yeah. I think most people have an idea of where they want to be. They just don't have a system, a way to get there. So let's talk about that, you know, for high earners, you know, and high earners, it's all relative, right? Just like Nelson talks about, you know, paying high premium relative to your income. Being a high earner is relative. Once you hit a certain level, call it, I don't know, 150 plus, you know, you're kind of in that range of you're more of a high earner, you know, and there's some people who earn 500, some people maybe seven figures. But if you're listening to this, just consider yourself a high earner. If you're earning more than you ever have before. And what most people have is you've got these hopes and dreams and goals. You just don't have a system to get you there. So maybe you had a banner year. You cleared more than you've ever made, but it still feels like you're starting back at zero every January. You start over, you come back the next January, and you look behind you at the last 12 months and you say, wow, I made a lot more money last year, but I don't feel, you know, any more peace. I don't feel like I'm any more successful financially. So, you know, why is that? So let's talk about that.
Yeah. And Nelson Nash would say the reason that is because you are not controlling the environment in which you're operating financially. So what we're going to talk about today is how you can better control the environment in which you operate in your financial life, so that you can every January when you do a tally of the previous year, you could say, you know what, I've had this financial headwind in my face my entire life, but I'm starting to kind of turn the corner. I've waited for the would it be the low pressure system, Dave, to go by? I don't remember my weather too much.
No, the high pressure moves the clouds.
And now
out.
I've got a. Okay, the high pressure. I don't have to worry about that stuff much. I mean, I'm flying at 100 feet off the ground, right? but now I've got a tailwind, or I've got, you know, a no-wind environment. I've got the point is we want to wait for that tailwind, and then we want to fly in that environment toward our destination. So create that tailwind.
Yeah. You know, you're not going to start with the tailwind. You start anything, there's going to be a bit of a headwind, and then it's going to rotate around 180 and finally be a tailwind. So the question, this is a really good question that somebody, one of the presenters at the think tank last week brought up, and I wrote it down. He said, if you were sitting here 3 years from now, looking back, what would need to be different in your financial world for you to feel like you're actually making progress? So maybe start right now, because look back 3 years. How different is your financial life right now than it was 3 years ago? Do you still have concerns about, you know, you're spending too much money, you have debt, your wealth is not compounding, you still don't have access to capital that you could be using for opportunities? So I started doing this just recently in the last year and a half or so, tracking all of my policies. And when I look from January 2025 to January 2026, and I look at how my policies performed, my cash value grew by 38%. My cash value reserve grew by 38% last year. What does that really mean? Well, when I look at the numbers, my cash value grew by significantly more than what I paid in premium last year, because I've now got a financial tailwind. I started with that headwind in the early years with those early policies, but now I've added more and more time has gone by, time being the big key. And now I have a tailwind. So every time I pay a premium, man, I am I'm getting some massive tailwind that's just pushing me along the ground faster and faster every year.
Yes, because some of your original IBC style policies, right, are now 15 years old, 16 premiums in. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, my oldest ones.
Yeah, I mean, those are looking real good. And of course, your only wish is, you know, those were designed based on what you could afford in premium at the time, right? They were big for you at the time as a single income, probably captain.
Exactly.
In the Air Force at the time. So that was big premium back then for you. But those policies are just so efficient now. Every dollar is making probably close to $2 of cash, right? Every dollar in premium, roughly.
Oh, yeah. So the early ones are making so much more in cash that it makes up for my brand new ones, which are not at the point of creating more than a dollar for every dollar of premium. But because I have some older and efficient ones, when you blend them all together, as a group, as a system of policies, every dollar I pay is creating more than $1 in cash now, in cash value that I have access to.
Yeah, that's great.
Tax-free for opportunities, emergencies, you name it. You know, so the real problem is this, you know, Nelson calls it opportunity cost and lost opportunity cost. Because most high earners, you're really good at generating income. Right. You spend your whole life working and working and working. And you finally get good at making money. I mean, you don't make money. You earn money. Right. The only people who make money are the Federal Reserve. But you're earning money.
Right.
But you're not acting like somebody who earns a lot of money because it kind of disappears as quick as it comes in. And maybe you pay cash for stuff now instead of finance from a bank. But guess what? You're getting rid of that cash. You lost the opportunity to earn any interest on it for the rest of your life instead of putting it somewhere where it can compound and you can access it and use it at the same time.
No, exactly. You said it. I was thinking about this earlier, you know, we were preparing for this episode, and the amount of money that the typical person, you know, listener loses throughout their life. They don't realize they're losing it, right? It's because they're doing things the way they've been taught to do. They put money, you get paid, put your money in a checking account, then you write checks or you do direct, you know, transfers to other institutions who need your money, whether it's for a car payment or whatever. If you could, you know, and of course what we're trying to do here is show you how you can keep more and more of that money. So the average person, though, is going to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars throughout their lifetime that otherwise could have been captured in this ecosystem of or system of dividend paying whole life insurance policies designed for the infinite banking concept if they would just kind of rethink their thinking, unlock some knowledge, right? That's the other thing that somebody talked about at the think tank, Dave, was be wary of people out there talking on YouTube or wherever who have the illusion of knowledge, right? Because they're speaking from a position of authority. They've got millions of followers. And again, Dave Ramsey's our favorite person to pick on this show, I guess. But it's true. He has some nice things to say and some good things to say. But he also has things that he says about what we do that are completely false and are being discussed from a position of ignorance. So, but he has this illusion of knowledge. You go into the comments and people are like, it's just, you know, the gospel just being spewed out of this guy's mouth. And of course, we both know, of course, that our clients know and our listeners know that he couldn't be more wrong about dividend paying whole life insurance or any life insurance product for that matter, probably. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, we find the solution being, like you said, dividend paying whole life insurance, specially designed to accumulate cash value. So we put our capital where it goes to live. It's not there to die and it's not stagnant. It's like living, breathing, growing every single day, every single year, not just accumulating and then I draw it down to go spend cash on something else, and then I accumulate it back up, and then I draw it down. No, it continues to grow, compounds uninterrupted for the rest of my life. I never lose the opportunity cost of earning something on those dollars. And that's powerful. I mean, you've created this floor that it's never going to drop. So, you know, at a minimum, you're going to have this much available for you at any age, right? And then it's just compounds on top of itself. So business cycles are going to go up, they're going to go down. You're going to have tough years, whether you're a business owner and you have, you know, a trough every year. Maybe it's around the same time every year. Maybe you're a W-2 earner and you didn't get much of a raise this year, right? That cost of living adjustment this year to keep up with inflation. Maybe you didn't get that. So then in reality, you're making less money than you were the previous year. You're going to have those dips, but it's nice having my capital somewhere where I know it's only going to continue to grow each and every year.
Yeah. And I used to say this all the time on the podcast because it's a good analogy, I think, but you know, your first life insurance policy, your first whole life policy, the open with us, right? It's going to take some time for it to gain some momentum, right? It's kind of like you're at the top of the mountain, you make a little snowball and then you roll it down the hill. Well, at first the snowball is small and it's rolling fairly slow, but, or should I have said slowly, fairly slowly? I don't know. I don't remember. But anyway,
slowly.
It's rolling slowly. It's an adverb modifying, yeah, how it's rolling, right?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't have much velocity, right? But by the end of its life, you know, it's at the bottom of the hill, the bottom of the mountain. The snowball is humongous and it's going very fast. Your dividend paying whole life insurance policy or your system of policies, you know, between the two of us, we have like 30 of these things. It is got so much velocity that, you know, an A-10 can't even catch it. Not that it's a super fast plane, but you get the point.
It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Yeah, speed is relative. So, I mean, bottom line, if you have to start over every single year, you're not building wealth. You're just trading money for stuff. You know, stop hitting the reset button on your millions. Put it somewhere where it's going to compound uninterrupted for you for the rest of your life. And I know 3 years ago, if you think back 3 years, yeah, you should have started it 3 years ago. Should have started it 20 years ago. But what are you going to think 3 years from now? Like 3 years goes quick. 5 years goes really quick. Where do you want to be 5 years from now? Well, you got to start today.
Yeah, Dave, I both have clients that reach out to us and they just say, man, it's amazing how fast the time has gone by. I'm about to make my third, fourth, fifth, sixth premium payment on, you know, my first set of policies. And they're amazed and thankful. And we talked about it, a couple episodes ago, but just people putting themselves, thinking beyond tomorrow and putting them, you know, thinking 3, 4, 5 years, 10 years ahead, thinking generationally and, you know, putting the tools in place now, right, so that they can do what they want to do 3, 4, 5 years down the road. It's huge, especially, you know, we did a military episode recently, especially for them, you know, people putting capital in a place where they can get at it so they can, you know, do the things of life when they get out. It's very powerful, and they're going to realize how powerful it is once they actually hang up their boots.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about, you know, the cost of your own capital. Like, your money has a value beyond just that the $10 in your pocket. It has a value well beyond $10. Because what does Nelson say? Whether you're borrowing from a bank or you're paying cash, you're financing that purchase. So let me ask you, Paul, what would be more expensive? Getting a loan from the bank to go buy a car or paying cash for a car?
Paying cash for a car.
Why?
Because you lose the earning potential of those dollars when you pay cash. And what I've told people is this: there's going to be an opportunity that comes down the road that you're not going to be able to participate in because you just gave up all your cash to buy that new truck, which is dollars brand new now, which is ridiculous, but that's how much they cost. So, yes, I'm just like this house. You know, I probably could have thrown enough cash together to just pay it outright, right? But I would then I'd have no cash to do anything with. And there's opportunities coming down the pipe all the time, right? I want to keep my powder dry and keep myself liquid. So that's how I do it, right? I keep myself as liquid as possible.
Yeah, all the time. I just texted a guy yesterday and said, hey, that project I'm in, you know, I'm gonna put money into a project. It's actually pretty cool. I'm going to earn like a 4-night stay at this safari camp in South Africa every single year, indefinitely. Plus, I'm going to make money on my money and get my money back. So pretty cool opportunity, right? If I had put all my money into my house so that I don't have a mortgage payment, I wouldn't have any money to put towards this opportunity. And let's be real, just on the subject of mortgage payments, you know, there's more cost than just your mortgage. You might eliminate a mortgage payment. Great. You still have taxes. You still have utilities. You still have maintenance, you know, just the cost of ownership. You still have upgrades. You didn't eliminate that much, really. There's still a lot you have to pay out of pocket just to live in your house. So, yes, you're right, though. You spend that money on something else, now it can't do anything for you. So what the solution is, really, with dividend-paying whole life insurance, you get the best of both worlds. You kind of combine debt and savings. You combine borrowing and paying cash, and you control the entire equation. So you're going to allow your cash to continue to compound uninterrupted, but you're going to borrow against that from the insurance company and go pay cash for the car. So yes, I can own the title on my car because I paid cash, but I didn't pay my own cash. I use somebody else's cash to go buy that car that I now hold the title to in my name. I own it. And my money, what's my cash doing? It's still compounding, uninterrupted. Like this, that. Where else can you get that? Unless you own a lot of stock and you do margin loans and that kind of stuff, which there's a lot of risk involved. So remove all the risk from the equation. Where else can you get that kind of those kind of terms?
Yeah. And, you know, I think somebody said that the other day, oh, I could just do a margin loan, Paul. And mm-hmm. yes, you can, but
you can,
you know, but that collateral, which is your brokerage account, is not guaranteed. The value of that account, if it drops, right, and you're leveraged, now you're going to have to bring up the delta, the difference, to make that account whole again, right? With dividend paying whole life insurance, the life insurance company is literally guaranteeing the value of the collateral, which will never decrease in value, ever. It goes up in value every single day, every single year.
Yeah, this is the stuff that if more people did this in their life, thought about just beyond the what's right in front of their face, the first order effects, and you think, what's the second order? What's the third order effect? Just like government policies, it's so stupid. They'll say something and you're like, yes, on its face, all else being equal, great idea. But guess what? All else does not remain equal. You can't do one thing and not have it affect something else, either create an opportunity or remove an opportunity. There's no decision you can make that acts in a vacuum. Whether with its policies, like, oh, we'll raise the minimum wage. Great, everybody has more money. Well, that comes with a second order effect of prices going up. You know, like,
and
unemployment, because what business is going to go ahead and just take the loss? No, they're going to cut expenses. Like that's an example of a policy decision where if you only look at it at face value and you stop there, you're going to lose. The same thing with your money. If you only look at it at the face value, this is an unseen wealth destroyer. The fact that people don't look at, if I pay cash for something, what is going to be different? What can I not do if I give away my cash for that car? You got to think about that stuff if you want to be wealthy. There's no escaping it.
Yeah, I tell you, when I started practicing IBC, Dave, I started to, you know, obviously I rethought my thinking. I started thinking about money differently. And one of the things I always tell people on, you know, maybe a first call or just continuing education with clientele is, you know, I pass like financial decisions or anything that has to do with a large chunk of money. There's like a filter I pass this through when I look at it. Right. What am I, and just like you said, if I do this, what am I potentially giving up? Okay. Is this, Is this the best opportunity? Is this the best use of my capital in this moment, right? So for example, coming up, I'm expecting a little bit of a windfall, and I've got some decisions to make, right? I've got some policy loans to repay. I've got some other debts that I could actually pay off in full. So I've got some decisions to make on how I want to kind of filter this money through and do those things. But again, if you just, like you said, if you just think about things a little bit deeper, just spend 5 minutes and just ask yourself that question, create your own kind of financial decision filter. All right.
Yeah. If or a decision get
this,
tree.
This is what I'm going to do. Right.
Draw it out. Create a decision tree.
Decision matrix.
Yeah. If then. So if I do this, then what do I have and what do I don't have? Think through that stuff. Right. You'll be amazed at what you come up with.
Yeah. Yep, you'll be surprised. But I always err on the scent. You know, the main word in our strategy is control. I want to have and maintain the most control over the most capital that I can. That doesn't mean that I'm just going to hoard it all, but I'm going to be strategic in how it's deployed.
Yeah, control. That's a great one. So let's talk about that when it comes to taxes and where most people decide to put their wealth building capital. So as a high earner.
Oh, I love this.
Man, the government loves you. You are their favorite business partner because make no mistake about it, you are a business partner because you're paying taxes. 30 to 50% of whatever you produce, they're stealing from you, right? And what do you get in return? I don't know. I mean, you get some roads, you get police, you get firemen.
Well, Paul, do you like to drive on roads?
Yeah, sure. We could have had roads without the public sector. Certainly private sector could not do something like that. No, not at all. Yeah. Are you watching Landman?
Yeah, that's actually true. If you go across. I love that show. Landman is a great show. It's one of the best I've ever seen. But yeah, you go out there and I've driven through Midland, Texas. I've driven through Odessa on my way, you know, across from El Paso to Kentucky. And yeah, there's private roads that the oil companies built and maintain and use.
Yep.
But that scene about the airplane landing and the female lawyer, they're just absolutely destroying those other two more senior attorneys. And then she gets him to laugh. What a great scene.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. But, you know, where are most people putting their money? Somewhere they don't have control over it. Putting it into a 401k. Oh, great. I get a tax deduction today. It's, you know, it's tax free. Well, nothing. It's really not tax free. It's tax deferred. And you're just kicking that can down the road so you can, you know, you plant the seed, but the government gets the harvest. And that's going to come due. It's amazing. I was talking to somebody at the think tank and he was like, yeah, I was just talking to somebody who puts a ton of money in a 401k and was, you know, telling me how big his qualified plan is and all this. And I asked him a simple question. I said, well, how much of that is yours when you go to take it out? And this guy was dumbfounded, like he had never thought of it before. I don't think that's any of our listeners. You, of course, are much smarter than that. And you've thought that, yeah, you know, you're going to have to pay taxes on that. But, you know, this is somebody else.
Right. So just for simple math, you have $1 million in your 401k, you're 59 and a half. Well, your 401k is really worth 800.
If you're lucky.
Way to look at it. If you're in a 20% tax bracket.
If you're in a very low tax bracket when you retire. Yeah. But
right. If, and you don't know what the tax brackets are going to be, do
you? You don't. You know, if Social Security is still there when you retire, that's going to bump you up because that's all taxable. That's going to just add to, you know, it's going to jump you over a bracket.
What a scam that is, right? It's like you contribute your entire working life into this Ponzi scheme. And then, yeah, you qualify for it and you get it, but then they tax it. It's unbelievable.
You know what? I bet if they were smart enough, they may figure out how to find out how much you're going to report this year when you're retired. And they may offer you more. Just to bump you up in a different tax bracket. Who knows?
Sure.
But actually, you sent me an article just yesterday. Maybe we can put this in the show notes. It's you know, it's titled really a little known law. but that Wall Street could seize your retirement savings in the next financial crisis, and it's perfectly legal. So a little known law that allows them to essentially raid your 401k. So we'll just post a link to this. It came from mainstream media, but you know, it's a story, take it or leave it. But if that's where you want to put your savings, somewhere that's owned, controlled, the rules are set by the government, then you got to deal with the consequences of when, if they change the rules.
Right. And Dave, I think that's the point, right? That we both know when you are putting money in a qualified plan, right? Any of them, doesn't matter if it's a 529, 401k, IRA, whatever, your business partner is the IRS, or maybe it's the politicians that you voted for, right? And the idea that those accounts are there to benefit you, they trick you into thinking that they are, right? But they're really not. Why? And all you have to do, again, is do a little bit of thinking and just dig into the history of the 401k and how it was originally for executives, and now it's, you know, it's pension kind of transfer from private company, you know, from companies, not private companies, but all companies, to really the individual. The onus is on you to do the best you can with the contribution to your 401k. So it's just, my goodness gracious, how did we get convinced? And I was guilty of this, folks. I did all of the things. I literally had all the things. I had a SEP IRA, a Roth IRA, a regular 401k, and I at 529s. I put money in all of those things because that's what I was told to do.
Multiple buckets for multiple different reasons, but you're taking 100% of the risk and all that. Somebody, make no mistake, somebody's getting paid regardless of what happens with that money, and it ain't you. You're taking all the risk. So that's
no
the
question.
Problem.
And
yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All I did in actuality is I separated myself from my own money. I separated myself and my family from our own money. That's all I did.
Well, luckily you changed things and you decided I'm going to stop separating myself from money by capitalizing your dividend paying whole life insurance policies, which does what? We're talking about taxes. So it grows, technically life insurance grows, that cash value grows tax deferred, but you always have access to it tax free through the loan feature. So as my money
Correct.
Compounds and I eventually have more in there than I've ever paid in because of dividends, because they're participating. So my balance of cash is going to grow higher than anything I've ever paid in my basis. I have access to all of that tax free. I just take a loan against it and it continues building. And then the greatest thing about it is, you know, I like to ask this question because you're going to have to pay taxes, right? Everybody pays taxes. Even if you get out of income taxes, there's every time you go spend a dollar, there's taxes. Every time you go to the gas pump, you know, here in Minnesota, like 42 cents of every gallon is purely taxes. What if there is a way to make sure that your family received back every dollar in taxes that you paid over your lifetime once you're gone? That's what this does for you. You create it for the banking function, this system of policies, but when you are gone, your family gets an income tax-free bonus coming to them in the form of potentially millions and millions and millions of dollars. So you basically get to recoup all the taxes you paid. Cool. At least somebody gets it. My family gets it.
Sign me up.
I already did. You were my first client, so.
Yeah, that's right. You did. Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So.
No, it's really brilliant. You know, ask yourself this question. How much money do you want to keep in your family? Well, you want to keep as much as possible, right? Generation after generation after generation, right? And it's up to you to start it. It's going to be up to you, listener, to start this thing. It doesn't matter if you're the grandparent, the parent, maybe you're a young adult. But if you want to control the banking function and create a perpetual system of wealth that will last generations, like the Rockefeller method, mm-hmm. unlike the Vanderbilts who lost it all in two or three generations, this is the way for the common man, for everyone to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't build your house You would never go build a house on land that you're renting from somebody. That wouldn't make any sense, right? Oh, I've just got a little
lease. There's no way they would let you.
Right. They would. Well, I mean, maybe I would let you, but guess what? That's my land. So now that's my house.
It's my land.
Yeah. So don't build your house on rented land. You know, if you're building wealth in a taxable account, the government owns that land you're building on. So build it in what we recommend, a private contract that you own between you and another company, private contract, you own it, and you're building your foundation there. And when you're gone, your family gets it. You know, no income tax issues whatsoever.
Yeah, and don't overlook, folks, the simplicity, right? This is a simple way to transfer wealth. It is the simplest way to transfer wealth to the next generation and generation after.
Yeah. There you go. So, you know, most people are busy. We're all busy with our heads down, just working, just plowing the ground, trying to build a good life for our families, make, you know, our children's lives better than ours, and maybe give them a step up, not hand them anything necessarily and, you know, do everything for them, but at least give them a step up on, you know, I guess compared to their peers or maybe compared to where you were at their age. And you spend your whole life working and building and building and building. And then you don't plan for what to do with that. Because when you step out of this life, when you graduate, if you don't have a plan in place, man, I mean, even the simplest plan, if you don't have a plan in place, it goes to probate, right? Then it's eaten up by the courts, attorneys, taxes, government, you know, opportunity costs with the time it takes to actually for the heirs to receive what's left of your estate. So do a little planning. It doesn't take much. Plan ahead a bit. And this is one of the easiest things anybody in North America can do is get yourself some permanent life insurance that, you know, like we always say, if you have the money to solve a problem, you don't have a problem. Your family is not going to have a problem if something happens to you.
Yeah, I keep thinking about Dave. This is great. Like, you know, folks are getting up there in age and you see, you know, friends, their parents are graduating to the next life. And it's like, man, wouldn't it have been nice? No one's going to complain that you left them a windfall, right? And you apportioned it appropriately, however you want, because you're the owner of this contract and in control of it. But no one's going to complain like, oh, grandpa left me, you know, $500,000 to launch my, you know, I used it to launch my business.
Yeah.
My tractor trailer business or my dump truck business or my whatever, doesn't matter. My vehicle 3M wrapping business, which was very popular. You know, people wrap their cars in different colors and different textures and whatever, but they left me an opportunity fund, right? No one is going to complain about that ever.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's important to talk about that death benefit being income tax free. In fact, I just had a client text me maybe last week and say, hey, one of my good friends just passed and his wife is wondering if the life insurance she's going to receive is taxable income. And I was able to tell him, it's if she's the beneficiary of his life insurance policy, they're married. No, that is income tax free death benefit coming to her. So.
I'm glad you qualified it. That's good. It's important.
Yeah, because there are some nuances.
Those particular things.
Right. So there's some nuance.
Sure.
There's some strange things that could be there. But if, you know, if it's
left part of your death benefit on one of your policies to me, it would be taxable to me.
Yeah, there could be tax implications to you because you're not dependent on my income for survival. You're not an immediate family member, things like that. Right.
Or maybe I am dependent on.
Maybe you are. I mean, we are business partners, so we could easily have insurance policies on one another. The good thing is you and I both have enough convertible term that we got to convert that on ourselves. So it's not that big of a deal, but, you know, as they say, the show will go on, Paul, if I step out or you step out.
The show must go on.
The show must go on. Yes. But anyway, there is something to think about, though. Just a little side note is estate taxes. And another conversation, you have so many good conversations at the think tank. Another conversation I had with somebody, with Hans, actually, he was talking about a client who was worth like $30 million or something. So his estate is certainly going to be taxable if he graduates tomorrow. So what he needed was he needed cash to pay the estate taxes. And your life insurance, it's income tax free, but it still is part of your estate. So if that's the situation Correct. You're in, we need to talk because you need to place some permanent life insurance in an irrevocable trust, remove that from your estate entirely so that that can pay Uncle Sam when your estate taxes come due. And that's a super easy, very simple way to do that is I'm going to put some over here in an irrevocable trust. When I die, my kids won't have any problem paying my estate taxes. They'll get my entire estate. They'll just pay the taxes out of this cash over here. So something to be thoughtful about. Not many people know about that because most people, when they hit that kind of level, they've been heads down working so hard to get to that level of being worth $30 million net worth that they probably haven't even had the time or taken the time to say, oh my gosh, now what do I do with it? What if I die tomorrow? What's going to happen to this, to what I've built? I want my family to have it all. So keep that in mind for your yep. estate planning.
And there's a sweet spot, right, Dave? You don't, again, this is not, you know, this is not tax or legal advice, but you are going to want to consult. And of course, if you're at that level, you ought to be consulting with a qualified CPA and a qualified tax attorney to right. advise you properly on kind of the sweet spot. You don't, because with an irrevocable trust and life insurance, right, you might be giving up some control, right, of those cash values today, right, so that you don't have to pay. Isn't the government so wonderful? They give you this ability to buy these things, and you have these structures over here, and then they say, well, if you do this, then you can't access this because if you do access it, we'll tax it. You know, it's, yeah, thanks a lot. Even though you pay tax your entire life.
You know, there are strategies and structures you can put in place where maybe you can access that cash value from that irrevocable trust. We're not the experts on that. Don't ask me. I just know there are ways to do that. You just got to start working with the right person to figure that out. So, because really we want to leave a lot of money back for our children, right? The goal isn't just to leave our kids money and you, the listener, the goal is not to just leave your kids money. It's to leave them a system. You know, a business could fail. They can make bad decisions with that money. They could go to Vegas and gamble it all, but a well-funded family bank is forever. You have the appropriate structure, the appropriate system of policies in place and generational planning. You can make it last.
Yeah. And this came up at the think tank as well, Dave, is that, you know, we have teenage children and younger children in your case. You know, it's important that, you know, with our family, money was never really discussed. It was just like, oh, you don't talk about money with family. But I'm taking the opposite approach. I'm really trying to educate my children and talk to them about, you know, things that we are putting in place and the things that they will put in place for their children. Right. And I think that's important because the other piece of this is you have to be worthy of an inheritance, right? You have to be prepared. There's only, you know, how many people do we know that could handle an eight-figure windfall and do something productive with it? Well, very few people are prepared to do that. My parents included. They're, God bless them, good people, but they don't know what to do with, you know, $10, $12, $15, $20 million. They have no idea, right? I'd like to think that they would not spend it all, right?
Right.
But, it's the education is critical in that regard.
100%, and passing on that education because, yeah, I would love it if the Lord blessed me with $100 million right now. I would know what to do with it. You know, I would know how to protect it. I'd know how to put it to work and living off what it made. We'd live a very good life off what that made every year. But not everybody knows that. And do my kids know that? No, my kids don't know that.
Right.
You know, I got to make sure somebody knows it. Yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, everybody should go, if you haven't been to thewealthwarehouse.com, go ahead and go there. We've got a course on there. You can order the Becoming Your Own Banker book, and that's where your next step needs to be. If you've listened to this podcast, if you've done your research online, maybe you've YouTubed a lot, your next step needs to be read Nelson Nash's book, Becoming Your Own Banker. Right? What else can somebody do, Paul?
Yeah, get on our calendar, right? Schedule time with Dave or me and get on our calendar and let's talk about becoming your own banker. We're going to talk about, we're going to answer your questions because you should have questions. I might answer one of your questions with a question because Nelson liked to do that. But anyway, that's the second thing you can do. So go to wealthwarehouse.com, take the course, buy the book, schedule a call.
Yeah, and send this podcast to somebody you know. If you like what you hear and you care about somebody in your life, and maybe you're not the high earner. But like I said, I think all of us know somebody who makes more money than us. Chances are they probably don't know any better than you on what to do with that money other than spend it on nicer stuff and bigger houses, right? So if you care about them, send them this podcast episode, educate them a little bit, and maybe they'll reach out and we can help guide them. So, Paul, you'd mentioned the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts. So next week, stay tuned, and we'll dive into that a little bit more and show you how, you know, the Rockefellers built something that's lasted. The Vanderbilts didn't. So join us next week.
All right.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's been fun. Paul, good seeing you again. And we look forward to talking to everybody.
Yeah, man.
Next week. And until then, as always, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.